Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Panelcast. This is AJ.
This is Brian.
And we want to welcome you to our 48th episode of the show. As usual, we'll be talking about some news going on around the net and the comic book world, as well as give you some of the reviews of the comic books that we've read. I believe that both Brian and I have done some serious reading this week, so we'll actually have something interesting to talk about. So, without further ado, why don't we go ahead and cut to our first break, and when we come back, we'll get right into it.
Hi, I'm a chick, and I read comic books and play video games, and yes, I am attractive. And whenever I need new information, I head over to Forbidden Panel and look for new geeks to seduce. And
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Panelcast. In this segment, we're going to talk about some of the news that's been going on. And, of course, it wouldn't be a news segment without Brian having something to say about Blue Water. So, Brian, why don't you go ahead and take away the news section?
Well, all right. Let's go ahead and start with Blue Water then, since you set it up for me. Well, as everybody knows, I have a particular beef with Blue Water Comics and their so-called biography series, which seems to be the only comics that they produce. They're taking this another step further, and they're doing a new so-called biography series that they're calling Faith. Basically, they are doing biography comics similar to the Female Force and the political comics, but they're doing it around mythological characters. I don't really know exactly how they could claim that these are biographies, but there you go. Some of the ones that they mentioned that they're going to be doing are Jesus, Buddha, Moses. I don't know if they're going to end up doing one for Muhammad. I'm sure that probably would not go over well at all. But, yeah. Okay, I mean, at this point, it doesn't even surprise me at all. I'm just like, okay, Blue Water, you sure? I guess somebody's going to buy them if they think that they're going to release it, so.
Well, it can't be any worse than any of the other crap that they're already putting out.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if they've already done Oprah and Stephanie Meyer, you may as well do Jesus, right?
What I don't understand is how Oprah came before Jesus. I mean, isn't that like blasphemy or something at that point?
I don't know. I mean, I don't necessarily even mind religious themes in my comics, even though I'm not religious at all. But they're promoting these as biographies, and like really, some of these people, you know, most likely didn't even exist. But okay, and like I don't know. I'm gonna leave it before I start sticking my foot too far into my mouth, I guess, and just move on to some of these other stories. Because everybody knows how I like to go on about Blue Water.
Yeah, no kidding. It's only an hour show, man. It's only an hour show.
All right, I'm sorry. All right, moving on. A little bit of cool news for anybody that's in the Southern California area or that can possibly get here by February 3rd. Neil Gaiman is going to be speaking at UCSB, which is the University of California, San Bernardino. And if anybody, I'm sure our listeners are probably quite familiar with Neil Gaiman and his work, most notably things such as Sandman, but also phenomenal books such as American Gods and Good Omens. So that would be something that I'd actually really like to see. But
where's this happening? When? What's the date?
It's UCSB. I don't know exactly where at the school it's being held, but it's on Wednesday, February 3rd. So I probably can't go because I have to work Wednesdays. If anybody out there is listening and really likes Neil Gaiman or just wants to know, the cost is going to be about $15 to $22, I guess. Here we go. Here's the information. UCSB's Campbell Hall. So it's 574 Mesa Road in Santa Barbara. Oh, I guess that's University of California, Santa Barbara. My bad. Why was I saying San Bernardino?
Why would you want to come down to this ghetto?
Yeah, I was... Okay, well, that makes a little more sense. I guess the San Bernardino school is probably not a UC. Moving on, I was also looking, decided to go and look up the top graphic novel sellers in the New York Times list, since it's been a while since we discussed, you know, some of the best-selling comics that are out there right now. Coming in at the bottom of the list is the trade for The Stand, American Nightmares. And actually, the two of the Stand comics are on the list right now, because at number seven is The Stand, Captain Trips, which I believe is the first one, right? It's the first miniseries?
I believe it is, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And The Stand,
I don't know,
actually,
I got them all for you. Haven't you read them yet?
No, I don't have them. But I'm surprised I haven't, just because I'm a huge Stephen King fan, and...
Well, as we both are.
The Stand, yeah, we both are. But The Stand is one of my favorite books by Stephen King, aside from his Dark Tower series. The Stand is one of, like, the... I think probably one of the best apocalyptic fiction novels out there.
Which was turned into a horrible TV movie on ABC.
Oh, I know.
With so fucking bad. Molly Ringwald. Come on, you knew.
Molly Ringwald, I know.
Molly Ringwald into a movie, it was going to be bad.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Molly Ringwald. I'm sorry for anybody out there that's a fan of all those 80s movies, but I just... If they could somehow edit her out of The Breakfast Club, I'd probably like that movie more. let's see, coming up at number eight, actually this kind of surprised me, was Pride and Prejudice. And not Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, but just a graphic novel version of the Jane Austen novel. So... That's actually kind of cool, I think, that comics are being used. It seems like there's a lot of comics coming out now where they're essentially just graphic versions of a novel, where they don't cut out any of the dialogue. Like, they have all the dialogue and the description going along with it. So it's sort of just like a really long graphic novel. But it's kind of showing that graphic novels and comics and literature can cross over, and they, you know, comics do count as literature. Let's see, what have we got up here? Number six is Green Lantern, Agent Orange. I've not followed the Green Lantern stories at all. It's a little too complex for me, so I'd have to go back to the beginning, I think, and start before I could really get into that. Batman, The Killing Joke by Alan Moore, coming in at number five. That was one that I have not read. And I keep meaning to, and for some reason I just haven't gotten around to it.
It's awesome. You should really pick it up.
That's what I've heard. See, number four here is Wolverine, Old Man Logan. Another one that I've not read, but it's done by Mark Millar. So
Mark Millar, and is the best Wolverine story out there. If you guys haven't read this, I think I talked about it on one of the past panel casts. But
Pretty sure, yeah. I think you have.
It's an awesome story, and if you haven't picked it up yet, pick it up. We'll probably put it on our book club listing coming up here soon.
Let's see. Number three, another one that kind of surprised me, was The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, another graphic novel version of classic work of literature. And it's again, I think it's kind of cool to see these things being able to successfully translate into the comic medium and to be successful while still being able to allow people to appreciate a work of literature. Number two is another Batman story, Batman Battle for the Cowl. I have not read this one, but this is, from what I understand, I think you covered this one, didn't you?
Yeah, I covered it. It was pretty good. It just lacked a lot. Like, they could have done a lot better with it. But, I mean, it's definitely something that you need to read in order to understand how Bruce Wayne is no longer Batman and Dick Grayson is. So it is definitely a mandatory reading for the transition of it. But if it wasn't mandatory, then I don't think I would have picked it up. Like, I would have dropped it halfway through it. But I had to read it in order to figure out what was going to happen. So.
And coming in at number one on the... graphic novel bestsellers. This one actually surprised me. but it's the Book of Genesis illustrated by R. Crumb. And I had mentioned this one in a previous news segment where R. Crumb decided he was going to take on the Book of Genesis. And it's actually, I really need to go pick this one up. I want to read this just because I know the man's work, and I know, like, anybody who's familiar with R. Crumb should know that this is probably going to be a little controversial to read, but it definitely is going to be interesting. From what I understand, it's basically just, like, it's all the text of the first book in the Bible. It's not actually edited at all, but it's just accompanied by R. Crumb's special brand of art, which is different, to say the least. And then, of course, we can't end this news segment without talking about, the one thing that's pretty much been on everybody's lips everywhere on the fucking internet. That
My
is,
penis?
Yes, AJ's penis.
Well, I know it's been on your lips, but I mean, I don't know how it got on everybody else's lips.
Okay, we're editing that part out. Moving on. No, I had talked about this particular thing previously, probably several months ago, back when it was still speculative, and talked about some stories. But Apple finally came forward and announced their giant iPod for digital comics and lots of other things.
But mostly digital comics.
Well, that was the interesting thing, is that I really didn't see a whole lot of discussion about the use of it for digital comics. Like, most of the stories that I saw about the iPad really kind of seemed to focus on the apps and the touchscreen, and it does this and it does that, and they really didn't seem to focus on the comics and the book reading features of it at all.
It's only because at that point that they're trying to appeal to the regular crowd, to the, you know, the Joe Schmo that'll buy anything with the little eye in front of it. Whereas we in the comic book industry understand it for what it really is, and it's just an eye reader. You know, it's their answer to the Sony reader.
Well, that's what I thought, because, I mean, the e-reader things are really taking off right now, because Barnes & Noble has theirs, Sony's had theirs for a while, the Kindle, of course, is ginormous, so I was really kind of hoping that they would focus more on participating in that market, but it just seems like what they gave us is a giant iPhone, basically.
Basically, yeah, that's what it turns out to be, it's just a big old iPhone.
And, I mean, I'll grant them this. The device looks nice. The screen looks phenomenal. So, I mean, digital comics on that thing are going to look nice. I'll give it that. But it just seems like they're not really focusing. Like, they're making a digital book reader, but not focusing on actually promoting that aspect of it. And I thought that was a little weird. But, yeah, okay. It's Apple. I don't know. They do their own thing. They kind of march to the beat of their own drum. So I'm just hoping, really, that one, the price tag is going to come down, because it's, yeah, I don't know that I want to spend over, what is it? It's launching it, like, for the just the basic model without the 3G support is supposed to be like $500.
I thought it was like $299 right now.
Is it?
Well, let's check it out. We have computers.
I swear that the actual price for that thing was a lot higher than I was expecting it to be.
Well, here's where I think that it's raping the consumer at this point, is that if you want to get online with the iPad, you have to purchase a data plan from AT&T. Now, explain to me why this makes sense, where I'm going to buy a data plan from AT&T but can't make fucking phone calls on this device. It's supposed to be an iReader or even just a tablet device of some sort, but still, you can't just go free Wi-Fi. You can't go bounce off the towers or any wireless signal that you may be able to acquire. No, you have to have a cellular contract with a cell phone company. I mean, come on. We already see how AT&T is handling the iPhones and all that stuff, and how long it took them to at least get, you know, text messaging capabilities within them. And now, once again, we're stuck with this. So I just don't get it. You're right. It's $500 it starts off at, and it only has a 1 gig processor.
Yeah. And this is the thing is, like, my biggest problem usually is not so much with the capabilities of the device itself, because I'll grant Apple that they do make devices that perform well. You know, I mean, I have an iPod at home, and aside from one of them that crapped out on me after a couple years, I mean, it works, it does its job, and it just, they're so restrictive with their software and the content that you can get. It's almost like they're saying, well, we're kind of just leasing this to you. It's not really yours. These computers are all ours. We're just going to let you use them for $500. And, you know, I don't like the fact that, for one, the iPad is just going to be using essentially their iTunes market or whatever the fucking thing is called, the Apple market. So you can't even really, like, load your own programs and stuff on it. It's only going to run apps, as far as I know. I'm sure people are going to be able to jailbreak these and hack them later so that you can get more out of them. But it just, it's... I don't like the fact that it, you know, that's something that you have to do if you want to be able to get the device to perform the way you want it to perform. And it's just, that's something, this is my biggest problem I've always had with Apple. It's just, they're so restrictive on everything. It's like, just give me a computer that runs well and let me do whatever the hell I want with it.
Right.
And then I'll buy everything you release. But...
Or hack everything you release.
Well, that's what people have to do, and I don't want to deal with that, and that's why I don't purchase Apple products, really.
Yeah, they're too proprietary to within their own systems.
Yeah, like, yeah.
You know, I mean, they're almost as bad as Sony. Well, Sony computers have, you know, changed their ways in the past few years, but it wasn't that long ago where when you bought a Sony computer, any product that you plugged in to it that wasn't a Sony did not function properly. You know, they set it up inside so that it just didn't work right. You would have to reformat your Sony to do a hard reformat with Windows and download drivers separately in order for it to work properly. So that's what Mac does. I mean, it's so into itself. I mean, Mac needs to have its own country at this point. It's just too much.
Well, I don't understand how a company can be successful, you know, operating that way and telling customers, well, this is how you can use product you purchased. You know, most companies, they'll have like an end user license agreement or something, but they keep it pretty open. You know, that you get a device and you purchase a computer, and for the most part with a PC, you can do whatever you want with it. If something goes wrong, it's, you know, because you screwed something up, and that's just a risk you have to take. And I guess Apple's reasoning maybe is just that they don't want to have some of the problems that PCs have with just being able to allow anything on them, but I can't deal with all the restrictions. It drives me nuts, and I don't know enough about hacking Apple stuff to go in and you know, homebrew everything. So it's not worth my time.
Well, here's the thing. Here's what the appeal of Mac is that it's a very simplistic device that looks pretty that anybody can use. I mean, you and I as PC users, we know that when we go to try and use a Mac, we actually have to dumb ourselves down in order to be able to understand what's going on with the Mac and how to use it properly. You know, and that's not meaning as an insult. It's just with Windows, we're taught to operate it in a certain way. And with Mac, it leaves out certain steps that we would have to achieve in order to get where we want to go. So for those people that are not very computer literate, they can come onto this thing and just excel right away. Whereas, you know, Windows people, we've been trained on how to do it a certain way. We've grown up with it, you know. Not saying that Mac is new. I mean, we've all had, like, the Apple IIe or whatever when we were growing up. But it's just very simplistic, and that's what people like about it. Plus, it's very shiny and pretty. And right now, it's a big status quo to have something that Mac runs. So it's just a big deal. I mean, I going down to my college, everybody and their mother has got an iPhone of some sort. You know, there's a very few select people in there in the computer class itself that actually have like an Android device or something, because we know how to hack and what we need it for to do what we need it to do. you know. But everybody else, they're all so trendy with their iPhones, and that's where Mac gets its popularity from. You go down to Washington, D.C. at any point in time during lunch and see how many people are walking around there with iPhones or iPods in their ears. It's ridiculous. Just, I'm serious, like how many little white cords are coming out of their ears everywhere you go. And that's the appeal of Apple. And they're great for video editing. They're great for photo editing. I cannot, you know, say anything bad about them in that. But for me, it's just not for me, and I don't like it. So there you go.
Yeah, it almost seems like Apple's not really a company so much as just a culture. You know, it's like they're really sort of very particular. People that like Apple pretty much only like Apple.
Right.
And it's not true for everybody, of course. I know people that have both a Mac and a PC, and, you know, people that don't. But it seems for the most part that people that like Apple will always buy Apple products, and they'll put up with whatever restrictions Apple gives them. And, I mean, again, I have to say that the device itself, the iPad, it looks fantastic. I mean, the screen itself on there, everything looks great. And you know comics are going to look great on this thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I really wish that they would have focused more on making it an ebook reader instead of just making it a giant iPod.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing that's getting us, that's catching us you know, that again, because they want to appeal to the mainstream people about describing all the other uses that it's for, when the comic book community is just blowing up over the fact that it's a new comic book reader for them. It's a way for them to, again, get digitally into comic books, which is a huge thing coming out nowadays, and something that you and I have been dealing with for the past couple of years, how much we like the difference between, you know, digital comics and real comics. Granted, the feeling of paper is still something that's very nostalgic to me and that I do. You know, we have tons of graphic novels here, but as far as portability goes, when I can carry around my laptop and have, you know, 100 gigs worth of comic books on there as opposed to carrying my entire collection around with me, that's, you know, I'm going to choose that, which is what a lot of people are looking forward to right now with this new reader, because now they have a device that's specifically for that. They can carry around this tablet-sized device that they can read comic books on without having to carry all their comics around in one place.
Right.
You know, so it's a portability function, and it's greener, for that matter, you know, appeals mm-hmm. to the green nature of things and carbon footprints, you know, and that we don't have to chop down trees to print on paper. We now have this digitally, and we're good to go. So the comic right. community is really abuzz about this and real happy about it, but I don't know, man, I'm still skeptical about it. Not the prices that they're charging, and not the fact that I have to pay $30 a month if I want to go online with this thing and download more stuff. You know, I'm not feeling that.
Well, my understanding was that it was, if you wanted to like have internet access and stuff on it, you had to pay for the subscription, but it would have just a basic download capability to download the comics and the books for free. Like
no,
most of the
no,
other ones.
I believe it interacts wirelessly in your network, internal network, as far as that's concerned. But because you have to be able to go to the iPhone store and all that stuff to
right.
do all those updates, but anything past that, I am not too sure on. But I do know that again, AT&T is charging for its use to go online. So I believe that it's just ridiculous at that point.
Yeah. One thing I will say, though, about some of the things that Apple makes is that they really do sort of force the other competitors to start producing items that can compete with their devices, and it usually ends up being more beneficial, because I'm anticipating being able to see like some full color tablet devices from some of the other companies, and we'll probably end up seeing something that'll be a lot more affordable too.
All right. Well, hopefully. I mean, we all know that down the line, give it a couple months, and it'll knock down on price. And again, it's in your best interest. I don't know about you, Brian, but for me, through the experience of video gaming and devices and stuff, you never buy opening day items. never buy a video game system that comes out on the first day. You never buy a phone that comes out on its first day. You never buy a computer that comes out on its first day because they haven't worked all the bugs out yet. And you, in turn, have to deal with all that issues until the second version or Gen 2 or Gen 3 comes out. So, you know, it's a good idea to wait a couple months anyway just so you have a better functioning device.
Oh, yeah, I always do.
But the price will also go down at that point. And then it also gives you a chance to, you know, make fun of other people doing it, or at least see somebody else who has to have that thing opening day, and then we can play around and see if it is indeed something that you want to spend that giant amount of money on. You know, and it's Apple, so you know it'll be updated and upgraded within the next few months anyway. I mean, how many iPhones have come out since in the past 2 years? It's just crazy.
It's like two or three, I think.
But they still just keep updating from 3G to 4G from the size difference and all that stuff. You know, it's not like we can buy, like, on a PC or a laptop where I can just buy a bigger hard drive or something. You know, this isn't flash card compatible. So you're going to have to buy, you know, different size hard drives to fit in there if you want bigger devices to carry more stuff.
Well, I definitely want to jump into the ebook format. I really like having physical books, but I don't have any problem with reading an ebook, so this is just one more to consider. I guess I'll just have to weigh all the possibilities of it. It just what I want to do is actually get into the store and look at the device and see what it does and see how it performs before I seriously consider buying or not buying it. But based off of everything that I've read so far, it seems like it's a little lackluster.
Right.
But that's all I've got for my news stories. If you've got anything you want to follow up with.
Yeah, actually I had a couple of announcements that I wanted to toss out there. As many of you know, Sundance 2010 is happening as we speak. I just wanted to announce one of the cool acquisitions that were picked up, something I'm very anxious to see in its originality, is the film Buried, starring Ryan Reynolds. And it's basically about a guy who wakes up in a grave and spends a couple hours trying to figure out how to get out of there. And by a couple hours, I mean, you know, it's a two-hour film, and those are the couple hours. But it's supposed to have been – everything I've read about it is supposed to be intense and amazing. And just – I can't wait to see it, and I want to check it out. I'm glad it's getting picked up for mainstream release. It's basically – it's just Ryan Reynolds in a movie by himself in a box. So, yeah, it sounds kind of boring, you know. Here's my dick in a box. Go. But at the same time, you know – To see whether or not Ryan Reynolds has the acting chops to pull off a movie that he's in by himself where it's just all him, that is going to be something that's impressive for me to see, because I think this is one of his ways he's trying to get rid of, very much in a similar fashion of where Robin Williams went and did as many comedy tours as he could before sitting down and doing 24-hour photo or Insomnia, because he needed to get the comedy out of him before he got into a serious role. I believe Ryan Reynolds may be thinking about doing the same thing, getting all the serious acting chops out of him that he can before he starts diving into movies such as Deadpool and The Green Lantern that will require a different style of acting for him. So I'm very excited to see this, and I'm very glad that it got picked up, and I can't wait to see it. But I could be wrong. It could be the biggest piece of shit that we've ever seen in our lives, but who knows? I'm still anxious to see it. Also out there, there is talks right now of a Hulk sequel. And discussing Thor in the Avengers. Right now they're trying to get Ed Norton to be again in the Hulk sequel and see what he wants to do with that. Though he has expressed interest in starring as Bruce Banner in the Avengers movie, which could be pretty cool. The only problem that they're having right now is deciding whether or not they want to include Thor into the Avengers movies because of the mysticism behind him and that he's a godlike character, and whether he'll fit into, you know, along other characters such as Captain America or Iron Man, or even the Hulk for that matter, because, I mean, those are all, granted, they're superheroes, but, I mean, you know, Iron Man is technologically based, and Captain America basically is just a well-toned athlete with a shield, and the Hulk is a genetic freak. So bringing in, you know, the mysticism and speaking vernacular that Thor would use into a film like this is kind of something they're afraid of tackling, and so they don't know what to do with it. So there is discussion about it. Now, I'm sure they will, but there's discussion about it, but it's on the hot track, and we should see some sort of trailer or some sort of movie or filming at least to begin within the next year or so. So I think that'll be cool. On the cheesy Geek Factor news front, there is a film being made currently or set to be made called Real Steel. It is And I'm so amped to see this. I don't know where to even begin. Okay. Let me get down to basically explain it and find where. Okay. It's described as being set against the backdrop of a futuristic sport of robot boxing. Jackman plays a former boxer who teams up with his long-lost son to train a robot for a world championship. Okay, I am all about this because it's cheesy. It's going to be campy.
Robot boxing. You can't
fun.
Go wrong with that.
Right? It's going to be so awesome. And then the special effects on top of that. Oh, man, I can't wait to see it. You know, it's not going to be any Oscar winning. It's not going to be something grand. But again, it's not going to be Australia. So I think Hugh Jackman's going to be okay with that. It seems that he's going back to his roots and where he did crap. What was that one movie he did right after the Wolverine, the first Wolverine, where he was the hacker? Yeah, it's
Swordfish.
Swordfish. That's what it is. It seems like he's maybe going back into stuff like that where he knows it's cheesy and campy, but he's still going to have a lot of fun and can, you know, put a little seriousness inside of it, as well as, you know, just some badass special effects. So I'm looking forward to seeing this. And as long as he's not Wolverine, I think he'll do a great job. Not that he makes a bad Wolverine, mind you, but it's just, you know, we're a little tired of seeing him being the same character in every single movie. He's got 4 Wolverine movies out, and he's only been popular for the past 10 years. So what does that tell you about his career already? You know, he's already been typecast. He needs to get on and move on. Right now, Mortal Kombat, the film version of Mortal Kombat, is in the process of being remodeled. In hopes of...
What is this, like the 9th one?
Yeah, it's like the 9th one. And I really don't even know why I'm reporting this other than the fact that I thought we wouldn't have enough stuff to talk about. But they are in the process of contemplating maybe the possibility of thinking about redoing another Mortal Kombat movie, so FYI. Michael Bay is currently out and about right now shooting for locations on the Transformers 3 film. If you visit his website, michaelbay.com, you'll see a lot of photos of him and his crew flying around on their private jet to different locations to decide where they're gonna, what location they're gonna decide to further ruin our childhood.
I thought his website was called imadouche.com.
I'm sure it redirects back to michaelbay.com, but who knows? So if you want to see Michael Baying himself, then head over to michaelbay.com and check it out. The last thing I wanted to talk about is to have maybe a moment of silence, if we possibly could, Brian, for Miramax Films has closed down and shut its doors. So let's have a moment of silence here, and we're done. Miramax Films has finally closed down after 31 years of operation. They have put out films such as Clerks, The Aviator, Chicago, Chocolat, Cider House Rules, Crying Game, The English Patient, Gangs of New York, Good Will Hunting, The Hours, Kill Bill, The Others, Pulp Fiction, The Queen, Swingers, The Talented Mr. Ripley. Why did I even include that?
And many others.
Trainspotting, just a bunch of awesome movies that they put in there. But they were purchased by Disney recently, and Disney has been slowly weeding everything out and shrinking them down to nothing. And it has finally happened. Disney has finally removed Miramax film. So, Kevin Smith, I don't know where we're going to see another movie from you could have come from, because Miramax was your bitch at that point, but now that it's all gone. Unfortunately, there were at least 3 movies that were, there were 6 completed projects that they had sitting on the shelf that weren't released yet, and nobody knows what's going to happen with that. The first one being The Baster with Jennifer Aniston and Jason Bateman, The Debt with Helen Mirren and Sam Worthington, the Supernatural remake of Don't Be Afraid of the Dark with Guy Pearce and Katie Holmes, The Gnome and Juliet with James McAvoy and Emily Blunt, Last Night with Keira Knightley, Sam Worthington and Eva Mendes, and The Tempest with Helen Mirren, Alfred Molina, and Russell Brand. All those movies were filmed, they're done, they're sitting on their shelves, but nobody knows what's going to happen to them now that Miramax is closed down. So we may see them, we may not. But other than that, Brian, that's all I had. So why don't we take a break from our extended segment, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the comics that we've been reading this week.
Forbidden Panel is currently looking for artists. If you or someone you know would like to join us, please visit www.forbiddenpanel.com.
Welcome back, everybody. All right, let's start getting into a little bit of the comics and movies and everything that we've been reading and watching and otherwise enjoying. I actually did some comic reading. This week, so woo-hoo. I've got some stuff to talk about. Yeah, imagine that. Let's see. We'll start off with the first thing that I read was I went and finally started catching up on Kick-Ass. Seems how the movie's coming out. So the movie looked interesting from the trailer, so I decided to start reading it. And wow. Yeah, this it's a very, very entertaining comic. This is written by Mark Millar. Is that how I say it?
Yeah.
And I can't remember the name of the artist on it. But yeah, this is a really good comic. It's a really interesting concept in that, you know, it's like this kid, this 14-year-old kid that decides he just wants to be a superhero and goes out, makes himself a costume, and proceeds to get his ass whooped all over the place.
To say the least.
Yeah. Yeah, some pretty bad things happen to this kid. But he still ends up making a name for himself and sort of inspiring other people to go out and become superheroes as well. And, well, really, anything that any sort of comic that has a 12-year-old girl killing people is going to be entertaining. And, yeah, this comic has plenty of that. If anybody's seen the trailers, you know that there's a character in this series that's called Hit Girl. It's a little girl that basically whoops a lot of ass. And her father. The only thing that I thought was kind of strange comparing the trailers to what I've read in the comic so far is that I cannot see Nick Cage as Big Daddy at all.
Right. Yeah, I can't see that at all. But, you know, Nick Cage, he has to be in a comic book movie any chance he can.
Yeah. But, I mean, I can't really blame the guy for wanting to take on these roles, but it just, I don't know. That's the only thing that kind of has me iffy about the movie, but I'll probably go watch it anyways, because the comic is very entertaining.
Well, you have to respect the fact that as a comic book fan, he's trying to be involved in comic book movies, you know. See, I kind of respect him for that, that he's a geek just like all of us, and he wants to get in there. But his problem is he needs to realize that at some point in time he's ruining them. You know? I mean, come on, Ghost Rider, you know? But at the same time, you know, hopefully that won't happen in this case. I mean, Big Daddy isn't really that big of a character in the comic. He's kind of just like an important side character, whereas Hit Girl and Kick-Ass themselves are the main characters in the comic. So hopefully he won't be in there and tainting everything like he normally does.
Yeah. But so
then you have to mention the fact that Kick-Ass takes place in a universe that is much like ours, where there are no superheroes. This kid has no superpowers. No. You know, he's just a regular kid who wants to do something about the injustice that's out there in the life, in the world, you know?
Right. They're all vigilantes. They don't have even, like, really super strength or anything.
They have no skills whatsoever.
Well, Hit Girl definitely has some skills.
Well, yeah, but I mean, initially with Kick-Ass, I mean, I think that's what the first trailer shows, is that these are all just dumb kids that want to try and do something, and the first trailer, you see some kid flying off a roof, crashing into a car, and basically committing suicide because he's trying to fly. He thinks he can fly.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the kind of universe and world that this is taking place in.
Yeah, like these people, they don't even have like any sort of like really like crazy technology stuff like Batman, you know. It's more of just like regular. I mean, they know martial arts and some fighting styles and stuff, but there's no like special inventions or anything that gives them any sort of real advantage. It's just their drive to want to go do it.
Right. Be it balls or stupidity.
Yeah. A little of both, I think.
A little of both, yes, yes.
But, yeah, it's really the comic does not pull any punches at all, and it's really well written, and it's entertaining, and it's done in a way that if somebody actually started going out and trying to be a vigilante, you could see it kind of going down like this.
It actually spawned a bunch of people out there to do this. Like there is, like in Pittsburgh, there's a couple of people that are dressing up like superheroes, patrolling the streets and trying to actually portray this and do this in real life right now.
I remember seeing some news stories about that, but I think they are actually like going out. Like they're not actually doing vigilante justice. They're just going out and, you know, sort of like being like costume citizen watchmen or something.
Yeah,
like
so
that.
It's like a neighborhood watch with dorks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, basically. But it's kind of cool. It's just another example of how you know, comics are really kind of coming into the mainstream.
Right.
Let's see, what do we got next? Oh, I also went and recently, I picked up some more comic books as well. Picked up a couple new trades. The first one that I read was another Warren Ellis story, and we've discussed before how we like Warren Ellis, and this story actually, I think it's probably one of my favorite ones of his that I've read so far, and not quite as much as I like Transmet, but this one is really good. It's called Fell, and this first trade involves this detective named Fell, who gets transferred to this sort of like slum kind of city. This is like this city where basically there's no real law and order there, and murders happen all the time and really just kind of go unsolved because nobody really wants to deal with it, and people just sort of spend all of their time looking the other way at all of the crimes and the horrible shit that goes on. And this guy comes to this town for undisclosed reasons and decides, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to clean this town up, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to clean up this town. I'm not going to let all these people just get away with whatever it is that they're doing. And so it's written sort of like a kind of noir in a sense, with just how dark the story is and just that sort of kind of first person narration style with Fell sort of narrating the story as it's going along and talking about the different cases that he's got going and just how much living in this town is starting to affect his sanity.
Right.
But it's really well written, and there's nothing too, like, it's pretty graphically violent, is just something that Warren Ellis does, but it's nothing that's too over the top any more than, you know, any sort of crime drama movie would be. So I think that's kind of what it is. It's sort of like a comic book version of like a crime drama movie. And I could see this particular film getting this particular comic getting translated into a film pretty easily. The art is all done by Ben Temple Smith, who I really enjoy his artwork. He just has this really sort of rough, sketchy style that really lends itself to these type of darker stories. I see.
But you enjoyed the book overall, right?
Yes. Yes, I did. I really like this. Like I said, aside from Transmetropolitan, I think this is probably my favorite Warren Ellis comic so far.
Awesome. Glad you liked it. See, originally, I don't know if we discussed this last week, but we're hosting, in conjunction with Four Color Fantasies, an event, a weekly event called the Comic Book Book Club. And what it is where a bunch of geeks get together at a location and we discuss comic books and video games and movies and what have you. So this book came up as a topic of discussion for us, kind of like an assignment so that we can read it and come in the following week to discuss it. So I, having read the book, thought it would be a great idea for people to take a look at it because it's not your common superhero campy comic book. You know, though, with Warren Ellis's writing and Temple Smith's art style, I think they both did a great job in just showing the depravity and the type of situation that the city that they're in depicts. You know, it does an amazing job with it. And the depression and monotone way of speaking that Fell takes a look at life is just really cool and done really well. And the way that he just decides he's not going to be corrupt or fall into the ways of corruption as the rest of the town has. But again, he's not going to go out of his way to be like super cop or anything like that. He's just doing his job, and that's his way of life. You know, I think that they do a real good job of showing that in the comic book. So I'm really glad to hear that you enjoyed it, you know, and that it's your second favorite to Transmet. And Transmet is an awesome book in itself, so that says a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely a good one, so I recommend everybody go out and pick it up. Let's see. Also, my third one here that I've got, I decided to finally start reading the Umbrella Academy. So I picked up the first trade for that. It's called The Apocalypse Suite, I think.
And how did you enjoy that?
This one was pretty good. I was actually surprised. I didn't really know how I was going to like it. It just, I didn't really know too much about the story. I mean, I've seen, what's his name, Gerard Way, in some interviews talking about it, but he was more really just kind of talking about the process of creating the comic and how much he really, you know, like how much he wanted to create comics and get into the comic book field, but didn't really discuss a whole lot about what the story was. So I didn't have a whole lot of knowledge going into it, but I really enjoyed this. It was good. It was interesting and very different. It's not your typical superhero comic. It's definitely sort of a little more bizarre, but I think I like it for that reason, because it's not you the characters in this, I guess the storyline, the setup for this story was kind of vague, so it didn't go into a whole lot of like the origins of these characters, so I would have liked to have seen more of that. But basically, at some random time, just a series of children are born that have some special abilities, and this guy, this sort of like wealthy philanthropist kind of adventure seeker, whatever. I don't know. He kind of looks like old British explorers with the monocle and the, you know, going out into Africa and stuff like that, but
it reminds me of the way Alan Quatermain was drawn in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah, kind of like that. That sort of like really like sort of posh, distinguished British gentleman,
right?
Kind of guy. But he adopts all of these children and then begins sort of raising them to be this super group. And I like the way that the comic sort of like deals with these characters. Is like they're not perfect. They all have problems that they have to deal with, and they're not, you know, like they're all kind of like human, you know,
even though they have like flawed celebrities.
Yeah, basically, like the way that the comic deals with it, it sort of jumps ahead from the time they're kids till they're adults, and it's like they've already had their prime and were this super group, and then they all sort of fell apart and don't really talk to each other anymore and have to kind of come back together to save the world. And their interactions amongst each other are, you know, tenuous, and they don't really seem to like each other all that much. They have a lot of inner conflicts, and I just sort of like the way that it deals with characters as sort of like real people, even though they have all these sort of bizarre and completely unrealistic powers. You know, it's, I mean, like the characters themselves are pretty outlandish in terms of the things that they can do, but the personalities that were developed for the characters are actually come across really well. And the stories are really well written, I have to say.
Really well written.
Yeah. Sorry. I was getting a little Elmer Fudd there.
Yeah, there you go, Elmer. It's okay.
But no, I got to give props to Gerard Way. I don't like his music at all, but I really do like his writing for comics. And the one that I purchased, it had like sketchbook in the back of Gerard's concepts and everything, because I guess he's an artist as well. And he's got a fair hand at drawing. They didn't end up, they sort of used his concept sketches to design the actual characters. But, you know, so that his drawing, the characters in the comics don't look a whole lot like his original drawings, but they use that as a lot of the basis for everything. And so a lot of that came through. So he really designed the look of the characters and really the look of the whole comic, even though he didn't draw it. So I have to give him props. He did a good job at it. And There wasn't a point in the comic where I was really bored with anything.
Yeah, when I read this, I was pleasantly surprised as well. You know, I went into this thinking, well, it's going to be this pretentious little comic piece, so there's some guy, you know, trying to break into the industry or whatever, using his name to get into it. And when I read it, and I grew a newfound respect for him. I thought, man, like, wow, this guy, he's a geek. You can tell off the back, you know, that with all the stuff going on.
Oh, yeah, he has
a
passion for comics.
Oh, yeah, he's got a mad love for it. And because of that, I gave him a lot of respect for it. And the comic, I think, was awesome. It's just, like you said, it's flawed. You know, that the characters are flawed. They're human, but they're not human. And their histories and their story, they're the most fucked up dysfunctional family you'll ever see. But, they're able to deal with that in order to try and save the world.
Right.
So I really dug it, and I'm glad that, again, I'm glad that you liked it. This is, again, another one of the ones I had recommended to you, so, you know, I'm always amped to see that I can recommend things for my friends that they'll like. So I'm glad you enjoyed it. But you need to read the second one now, now that you've read the first, because the first one sets up hardcore for what's going to happen in the second one.
Right. So I'm definitely going to go pick them up because I enjoyed this book. So, yeah, if anybody out there has not read Umbrella Academy, I would recommend picking it up. Give it until the second issue. The first issue is kind of slow, but then it picks up from there, and then this story gets interesting.
Awesome.
Well, I think that pretty much is going to cover all the stuff that I've done that I'm going to review. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you.
Fine. I'll take it from here. This week, I think it's funny. I actually didn't do much comic reading until last night. And last night, I sat down and read a few books that, well, I thought were awesome, and I feel like I should share with you guys. The first one being Sweet Tooth. Sweet Tooth is a book written by Scott Lemire, I think that's his name. If you give me a second, I will look it up. It's basically kind of like a post-apocalyptic type of piece where you find out that the world, something's happened in this world where all the normal people have died, and what's become next is these people that kind of have, they're like half animal, half human. So they're born with animal characteristics.
And like Island of Dr. Moreau kind of stuff?
Kind of, yeah, almost like that. Jeff Lemire, that's his name. And I don't know if you remember, but I talked about Jeff Lemire previously in that he wrote a book called The Nobody, which was an amazing book, and I was really surprised by it. That was the one about the invisible man that walks into a town, and because he's a new guy and it's a small town, people just can't leave him alone. They're too curious about what's going on with him, why he's wearing bandages and stuff, and he did a great job in writing it. So he comes up with this new book called Sweet Tooth. The first book is already finished, so if you get a chance, go pick it up. It's put out by Vertigo. The basic premise, again, is that, you know, this apocalypse thing has happened and all normal people are dying out. So you're introduced to this character, Sweet Tooth, whose real name is Gus. And his father has raised him in this cabin in the woods. And it's really more of a retreat, like a forest reserve or preserve. And the father raises him to believe that if he steps outside the forest, he'll be hunted and shot and killed and or done experimented on or what have you. You find out that the mother died giving birth to Gus. And the father, there's a poison that every normal human being out there has in them due to whatever this event was, and it's killing everybody off slowly. Those that survived the big initial event, whatever it was. So the father eventually dies, and the kid is sitting there like, okay, well, I'm this kid. And he's grown up on real hardcore religious beliefs, you know, about God and everything, but kind of in a stupid rednecky kind of way. Well, eventually the kid decides to step outside what world he knows and journey out into the outside world, and he's met with all kinds of weird characters and so on. And at this point, it becomes kind of like a road trip book, in that, you know, it shows the growth of the character and his actual innocence and the type of things that he has to deal with coming from here. It's only, I believe, it's like a 7 or 8 issue series. It's really, really good, and it comes out of left field. Like, it takes you completely by surprise. So if you have a chance, pick it up. Again, it's called Sweet Tooth. It's done by Jeff Lemire, who some of you may know. He does Essex County for Top Shelf, and again, he did The Nobody. And he's really one of these people that have just crept up on me and surprised me. We talked about it in our interview with Bria Grant, where she discussed that she had read the book and liked it. And it was because of her recommendation that I went ahead and picked up the book. And yeah, it's a great book. So get a chance, pick it up. And also, you know, any opportunity to find a post-apocalyptic book that doesn't involve zombies, I have to now look into, apparently, to expand my knowledge base. Because I was recently approached by somebody at the comic book book club, actually, who asked me about any books I might know that's so, that, and all I could think of was zombie-related material. because Walking Dead is so predominant in my brain. So now I have a new book I can recommend. So here we go, you know.
I'm always down for some post-apocalypse action, so.
Yeah, and it's not really like you would expect it. It's almost like Why the Last Man, in that you do come across, like, different sects of people, but there was no actual war, so there's no devastation, and there's no Book of Eli feel or the Road feel, you know?
So the people just sort of died.
Yeah, people just sort of died. It's like The Stand, you know, where you walk in, towns are still put together, it's just there's nobody living in them. So it's like a ghost town effect as opposed to utter destruction and devastation that has happened. So, and it's just a different look at it, and you should really check it out.
I'm writing this one down. Sweet Tooth.
The other book I started reading, which is a book I've been trying to read for like the longest time, I just never had a chance to, or just never felt like I would like it, and that was Fables. Now, I know most of you people out there listening have already read Fables, or are already into it, I know, because it's on issue 101 already, and I'm just barely starting, but I have to tell you, this book, again, took me by surprise. Vertigo has been doing a great job of taking me by surprise and impressing me as of late. I think when growing up, having read Vertigo books, them being something different than Marvel or DC, I kind of didn't like them that much. But now that I've grown up into, you know, who I am and my taste has expanded, I'm able to appreciate the books that they are and for what they are. So Vertigo did a good job in this, in Fables. Basically what it is, if you imagine all those stories that you heard as a child, Snow White, Wizard of Oz, all the fantasy stories, stuff like that, that have taken place, the Three Little Pigs, Little Red Riding Hood, books like stories like that, Jack and the Beanstalk. If you take all those characters, being not only the characters, but the monsters and the creatures as well, and they lived in what was known as like a fantasy lands and different universes of fantasy that they lived in. And this creature known as the Adversary has come and conquered all of their realms, and so they've been forced to live into our world and our reality. And in order to do that, they've decided to kind of keep everything low-key, almost like Garcia did in Anonymous Rex, in where the dinosaurs don't want to be, you know, public things. They wear human masks as disguises to kind of fit in, and that's what Fables do. They put it all in there, and they live in this town called Fable Town, and it's basically New York City. It's just a hidden community. So you're introduced to the character of Snow White, who is kind of like the mayor's second in command, but the mayor is just mayor in name only, and she kind of runs things. And she's faced with a murder mystery, and where her sister Rose Red, otherwise known as Little Red Riding Hood, has been found to be murdered. They haven't found her body, but there's blood all over her apartment. So she goes to the lead detective, who is the Big Bad Wolf, otherwise known as Bigby in human form, and he has to investigate it. And that's what this first book is about, and that he's investigating the possible murder of Little Red Riding Hood. But again, these are normal people, so you got to see them in the existing world. Rose Red is shown as like this party chick who's kind of like, you know, resisting to how she was all full of innocence in the initial story that she was produced in. So she's like this little party girl out there dancing and wearing two tubs and nice ass and a nice rack and the whole nine. She's dating Jack of Tales, who's Jack and the Beanstalk, who ever since being sold those magic beans, he's always full of get-rich-quick schemes. So he's trying to do like the dot-com thing or trying to sell the lands that he had in his fairy tale land, which nobody can access. So he's trying to sell them. And
these like modernized versions of these classic characters.
Right. Well, they are those characters just having to be forced to live in our world. So they're forced into modernization. So that's
how. Actually sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it is. And I didn't think I would like it. I thought it was going to be cheesy, kind of romancy, chick book type thing. But man, I was taken aback. It's totally not what I expected. And it's pretty cool, actually, to see how everything is done. Prince Charming is shown to apparently have like this mutant power to where he can, anybody that isn't of the fairy tale land, isn't a fable. They're called Mundies, the mundane people. So he's first introduced at a restaurant, and the waitress is like, okay, well, you know, here's your check. And he's like, you know, I was actually thinking of not paying this check. I was thinking you're paying this check, and then we can go back to your house and fuck. And she's so enamored by him because she's Prince Charming And she's like, okay. And pays his check, goes home, and bangs the shit out of him. And then the next morning, he leaves a note saying, hey, my laundry is in my suitcases. Could you do them for me? I dropped my dry cleaning off at this place. Can you pick it up for me? I borrowed some money out of your purse, and I'll be back in a couple of hours. By the way, I'm staying here for a couple of days. I didn't think you'd mind, because when I come back, we're going to fuck again.
Wow.
So, that's Prince Charming, and it works on everybody that isn't a fable.
That gives a whole new meaning to that phrase.
Right? He charms their pants off, literally. And that's how these characters are. They're just, like, Bluebeard is this ultimate weapons nut. Like, Bluebeard has been known to marry women and then kill them at night during their honeymoon. That's how his story is. And so now he has, like, this charmed apartment where you walk in. It looks all tiny from the outside, but you walk in and that's actually his castle that he lived in, full of weapons and dungeons and all that stuff, all stuck in one door, one tiny apartment. And, you know, he's a knife expert. So he goes and he's slicing people up and torturing people and stuff. And the first book is really awesome. I was like, really? I finished the first book. I was like, shit, I need to read the second book, but it's 2 a.m. So I plan actually on reading some more of this after some time today in order to be able to give you guys some more stuff about it. But if you haven't checked it out, it's a great time to pick it up because they have a lot of spinoffs that are happening right now. Jack of Tales has his own book called Jack of Fables. Cinderella has her own book that has just come out. They actually put out a written book. What was it called? Peter and Max, a Fables novel. It's an illustrated novel centering around Peter Piper and his wife Bo Peep and his brother Max, who will later grow up to be the Pied Piper. It's written by William and illustrated by Steve Lealoa. It's in hardcover, and it's like Harry Potter. You know, it's got all the text and everything in there, but the occasional image to accompany it, and just a whole bunch of other stuff. This is a really good book, and I'm really surprised, and it's doing really, really well. So if you haven't picked up this book now, you should pick it up because it's not what you think it would be, and it's an awesome look at it. It's almost what what's his name? McGregory? Whoever did Wicked. It's almost what he was trying to attain with his stuff, but without all the folklore and the gayness.
Right.
So and it's followed by some really great artwork. And yeah. I was really surprised. I got to give it up. Fables is a good book. So if you haven't picked it up yet, pick it up. It's created by Bill William, and I believe it's put out by Vertigo again. So yeah. That's all the comics I read this week, but I did want to touch base on a movie I saw. Actually, I saw two movies this week, and those ones were great too. I've got nothing but good news for you guys this week, man. I'm all happy about the shit I had to deal with this week. First movie I saw was The Lovely Bones by Peter Jackson. This one is about a girl who was, murdered and raped. And she is now living in limbo, trying to accept the fact that she is dead and trying to let go of her family and people based in the real world. All the while, her family is trying to deal with her murder and trying to find out who the murderer was and what had happened. I pretty much knew walking into this movie that I was going to I needed a box of tissue, and I was not disappointed in that. Peter Jackson does a great job in mixing the fantasy world with the real world. And it's probably one of the very few movies where I liked Mark Wahlberg in. That he didn't disappoint me in his acting style. The visuals were amazing. The soundtrack, I think Peter Jackson nailed it. Playing this Mortal Coil during one of the most pivotal scenes in the movie, that's what got the tears flowing. Stanley Tucci did a good job as the villain in this movie, and you really hate him in this movie. I mean, you really can't stand it. And the only thing I didn't like was the ending, but I think that's because I, as a father, didn't agree with how things had wound up, but pretty much everything up to the last 2 minutes of the movie was phenomenal. It's up for an Oscar right now, and I think it has a good chance of being a contender to getting it. If you haven't checked it out, it's in theaters right now. It's The Lovely Bones. It's just a pretty movie, and it's good, but depressing all at the same time. So Peter Jackson does a great job, a great recovery from King Kong, you know, in that
right.
He nailed it with Lord of the Rings. And seemed to have dropped the ball somehow in King Kong, and I think that's only because he cast Jack Black in a serious role. But he picked himself up from that and comes out with The Lovely Bones, and I think he did a good job with it. The other movie I watched was Sherlock Holmes with Jude Law and Robert Downey Jr. And the first thing I have to say is I don't know what the hell you people have been complaining about. This movie was fucking awesome. I've heard nothing but complaints online about how it's boring or mundane or it just wasn't all that great. You guys are fucking stupid. I'm sorry. I know I'm offending a lot of people right now, but here's the problem that I see, and I totally agree with people, a lot of people on this aspect. You see that a movie's coming out, you see the name, you see the trailer, you think, oh, it's going to be cool, and you want to go see it, and you don't want to think about anything else that is maybe associated with it. But the problem is that right now, you go and you see that, and you walk out, and you're disappointed. Like Cloverfield, for example. You guys saw what Cloverfield is, a monster movie, but you did not understand that it was going to be a first-person camera shot or more of a personal setting as opposed to a monster side of a movie, so you walked out pretty pissed off. And, you know, again, I can totally understand where you're coming from. The problem is that nowadays, with the economy being what it is and with Twitter and Facebook and how mainstream it is and how easy access you have to celebrities and news and in-depth reporting as to what these things are about, you really have no excuse for why you walk into a movie and not knowing what to expect. You know, we don't have a lot of money to be spending on these movies, and so you'd want to obviously spend money on a movie that you're going to enjoy.
People, you think.
Yeah, so people walked out of Sherlock Holmes being upset because how boring it was or how slow-paced it was or what have you. Have you not ever seen a Guy Ritchie movie? Have you not seen Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels? Have you not seen Snatch? Have you not seen Revolver?
Right.
You know, Guy Ritchie is very – his film style is very dirty, where all these people that you expect to be pretty and glamorous are just nasty and gritty. You know, they don't look all that – there's not a lot of makeup involved except to make them uglier. And that's one of the things I like about him. He takes Brad Pitt, makes him look like shit, and he still comes out a star, you know? And that's what Sherlock Holmes does. And not to mention, Guy Ritchie's very dialogue-driven.
Yeah, witty dialogue is his thing.
Right, almost in a Quentin Tarantino style to where they're going to talk a lot. And that's what this movie does. Sherlock Holmes does a great job of showing Robert Downey Jr. as this agoraphobic recluse that has a lot of logistical and analytical thought processes, and that's what happens in this movie. That's how he becomes Sherlock Holmes. It's not really so much an origin story as it is an introduction into the character Moriarty, who doesn't even show up but a few 5 minutes in the movie till the end. The rest of the time, Sherlock Holmes is dealing with this other villain and other murder that's mind-fucking him to the point of where Moriarty sees this and tries to take it and take advantage of it. So we know that in the sequel, we'll see Moriarty. But in the meantime, that's what you get for Sherlock Holmes. Robert Downey Jr. does a great job of playing a recluse and agoraphobic person who is, you know, self-depreciating and a masochistic in a style. The boxing parts that you see in the commercials is how he makes money when he's not on a case. But he'll break it down. Like the first scene you see, I mean, the first 2 minutes is him hiding from somebody, and he looks at the guy and he's like, okay, so he's deaf in his left ear. He has the light, but he's favoring this. So if I punch him in his ear, it'll cause a ringing. I punch him in his throat, it'll stifle the scream. I punch him in his thorax, it'll take the breath away. Then I kneel down and take out his right knee, and he'll be incapacitated long enough for me to run away. In 90 seconds, he'll be back, and it'll take him about 2 months to recover from this psychologically and physically. And then he goes into it and does it.
Right.
And that's how this movie is. And I think Guy Ritchie nailed it in this movie. It's an awesome movie. It's flashy when it needs to be. It's violent when it needs to be. It's very deliberate when it needs to be. And the rest of the time is filled with witty banter and dialogue that occurs between not only Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law, but all the other characters within the story. And Rachel McAdams is gorgeous in this movie also. I mean, it's an awesome film. And I know that a lot of you have probably already seen it, and I'm coming late with this review, but if you haven't, go see it now while it's in theater, because it's got the kind of cinematography that needs to be seen on the big screen as opposed to a TV. Though granted, nowadays with the widescreens and the LCDs, you probably won't miss much in the conversion, but still, give it some money and go check it out yourself, because it's worth it. And that's everything I got for this week.
Yeah, well, I think we had a good series of reviews this time. We had a bunch of stuff that we enjoyed and nothing that irked us particular. So I think we'll go ahead and we'll leave it at that. We'll take a quick break.
Hey, this is John from Hightower Comics. This is John, everybody, to go check us out at www.hightowercomics.com, where you will get the height of independent comics.
We are back, and let's go ahead and start talking about some updates and things coming up for Forbidden Panel. We've got the Rose Bowl comic show coming up. If you've got AJ, you actually have more details on that than I do.
Yeah, it's the Rose Bowl Comics and Collectors Show. It takes place during the Rose Bowl Flea Market, which is a really huge event that happens every second Sunday of the month at, obviously, the Rose Bowl. The flea market usually pulls in about 10,000 to 15,000 people, and it's a chance for you to be able to pick up, like, antiquing, as well as, like, you know, swap meet and flea market, things that you would normally shop for. Well, the Comics and Collectors Show is being put on by RJ Canning and Four Color Fantasies, and it's being held in the actual stadium, but in the locker rooms. So it's a very big space for us to be in. We're going to have a bunch of cool people there. Sergio Aragonés may be able to stop by at some point in time and do some signing. But other than that, it's a good chance to meet all the local independent artists and creators that are there, as well as some cool shops that are, you know, trying to sell all their wares or what have you. You get great prices down there. We pick up a lot of great graphic novels. We'll walk out. We walked out from the Shrine one with four volumes of Walking Dead and only spending $20 altogether, you know. So that's the kind of place that this is. You know, it's a great chance for us independents to try and meet the new people, try and get our stuff sold and become public knowledge for it.
And just a good place for you to come and get some great deals on comics.
Right, and a great place for you to come and pick up some great deals on comics. So if you have a chance, come down and check it out. It's, again, it's really, really cool in that, you know, unfortunately, it does fall on Valentine's Day, but if you convince your girlfriend that as a geek, you need to go.
Then, hey, she's a keeper.
Right, and she's a keeper. But also, it's a good chance because not only do you get the comic book show going on, but you also have the regular flea market. So if you're a flea market shopper or someone just interested in making deals anyway, come on out and check it out. It's a real great event. Plus, it's very high-quality stuff in that it's at the Rose Bowl. So you get a lot of people coming in from Hollywood or L.A., you know, all the movie actors and stars and stuff that come down and do their shopping at that location. So you have a lot better quality than you would normally see at your run-of-the-mill swap meet. You know, there isn't a lot of broken, used crap there that's set up there. It's not like that at all. So come on down and check it out because we'll be there. We were there last time, but we were there with Justin, who was doing his Necrosapien stuff. And we were trying to promote the preview of ZKS coming out. But we'll be there this time. Forbidden Panel will be in its official pet capacity. We'll have copies of ZKS-0 with us. We'll have posters to sell, stickers, and other artwork that'll be there as well. Justin and I will be there signing. Unfortunately, Brian can't make it. And also, Brandy Ossett will be there selling her book. And Brian Oliver will be there promoting his independent short film that he recently shot that I got to run the camera for. So come on down and check it out. It's a great opportunity, and you'll be able to pick up a copy of ZKS-0. The first five people that comes up and says that they heard this on the panel cast will get a signed poster and a signed comic for free. So if you want this stuff for free, please come on down and do it.
Yeah, and more exciting news, too, on top of having our stuff available. We are going to be having a release party for our ZKS comic, since we're all fucking ecstatic that it's coming out. This is really all I've been thinking about for the past week and a half. It's just the fact that the comic is coming out and we're done. We've got our first one, and now, I mean,
and now we only got 13 more to go.
Well, technically we have 14 more to go.
Well, yeah, but technically, but still.
But yeah, no, this is an exciting thing though. So we're going to be having our release party. We're holding it. We confirm we're holding it at Four Color, correct?
Right. We'll be holding it at Four Color Fantasies on the 18th.
Sweet. Yeah, so we're going to be at Four Color Fantasies in Rancho Cucamonga. If you don't know where that is, go ahead and check out our site. We'll probably have all of the information listed up there for where it's going to be if you want to stop by and buy some of our shit, which I think you should.
Yeah, well, you know, this is like, call it pathetic or what have you, call it what you will. But, man, I know personally Brian, Justin, and myself, this has kind of been a dream of ours for like a very long time, is to actually have a comic book come out and just have a comic book, period. Four Color Fantasies does an amazing job in that they support the little guy, and not only has offered to throw us a release party, but we'll be stocking ZKS0 on their shelves. So that's literally a dream come true for me. My comic book, our comic book, will be sitting under Wolverine and the X-Men, and then ZKS. You know,
right.
Just in alphabetical listings. That's just phenomenal for me. I can't tell you how big the goosebumps are sitting on my arms right now. So
I have this big shit-eating grin on my face.
Right, exactly, man, exactly. So, again, Four Color Fantasies, awesome. We're more than grateful for all the stuff that you've done for us in the past and what you're going to be doing for us in the future. But they're helping our dream come true and stocking our comic on the shelf, and they're throwing us a release party. Now, what is a release party, you may ask? No, it is not a come down and get drunk at a comic book store event. No, basically, we'll be sitting down there all day at a table, signing things and talking to people and promoting the comic book and what have you. For us, it's a 12-hour work day, but for you, it's an opportunity to come in there and be part of our dream and help us, realize what we've been doing is not a waste of time, basically. All the crap that all of our parents have said, this is to shove in their face. Look, Mama, look. Okay, so... just come on down. Come down any point in time. We'll be there between noon and 10 o'clock at night, just signing all day and doing some stuff. So we'd appreciate if you can come down and just show us some support. All the money that you'll be paying for the comic goes directly to the comic book shop itself to help promote for other events that it's coming up. And that's just one of the deals that we made with them, you know. So there you have it.
Yeah. Oh, exciting. We've also... got a comic book club. We just mentioned this a little while ago when we were talking about Fell. We really want, especially if any of our listeners in the Southern California Inland Empire area that can make it out, we want to start having the comic book club be just a regular thing of just people getting together, kind of like what we do here on the Panelcast anyways. We just sit around and talk about comics and geek out about stuff. And we kind of want to do that in a group setting and get people together, pick a comic to read for the next time. And sort of like the, you know, old lady book clubs where they sit around and discuss literature, except we'll be doing it with comics and nerds.
Exactly. I mean, it just doesn't fall under the comic book category as well. You know, we just name it that because it's somewhat familiar, but we'll also be dealing with video games and movies and so on and so forth. So, like Brian said last week, we decided to choose Fell as a book. So, again, Four Color Fantasies, being just the best comic book store I've ever been to in my entire life, has sponsored the event and offered 30 to 40% off of any of the books that are offered to read during the comic book club. So, you know, Brian was able to pick up Fell, a $15 comic book, for what, 10 bucks you paid?
I think so.
So,
something like that.
You know, they're doing a great job in hosting and sponsoring the event. So, but then this week, who knows, we may talk about video games and decide, okay, well, this week, let's play a video game, come back next week and we'll discuss it. Or, hey, we like this movie. Let's go see this movie this week, come back next week and we'll discuss it. It's really an opportunity for us to get out of the digital part of our lives and get into the social interaction part of our lives, which
I
know.
Yeah, I need to do more social interaction.
Right. Well, people like you and I, Brian, who have a problem being in the public or talking to people, this is a great opportunity to do so in an environment where you already know that the topics that you're going to discuss is something that you follow or can discuss, you know, because you're already a comic book fan, you're already a video gamer, you're already a movie watcher, you know, so this is an opportunity for you to come out and meet with a group of like-minded individuals and just have fun. We're doing it at Coffee Depot in Riverside. They've been gracious in hosting the event. That's this week on Sunday. We'll be meeting there at 6 p.m. You can find out more information by visiting ForbiddenPanel.com, finding us on our Facebook, or emailing me info@ForbiddenPanel.com. Any information you ever want to know about anything that we're doing at Forbidden Panel, info@ForbiddenPanel.com is your best email to get a hold of us. And we'll be able to get a hold of you at that point. Next week, I believe we're moving the meeting over to Four Color Fantasies to have it there. Where we'll also be able to be playing Munchkin or any other cheesy card geek games that we can play after the meeting. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was fun just kind of sitting around and talking for our very first meeting where nobody showed up except for us, but we still sat around and we talked that geek stuff and had a good time.
Right. Well, and then we met a couple people there that were just random geeks at the coffee shop, and they decided to come up and join up. So now we have two more members.
So just come by. You just meet random people. I mean, you may end up, you know, just finding someone cool to hang out with. So.
Right. I mean, again, I mean, you got to realize who we're there with. I mean, you got Brian and myself who are just putting out our first comic book. Brandy Ossett, who is a published author. Brian Oliver was there last week, and he shot his first short. We met up with Jeremy and Evan, who were there, and one of them works for a magazine, one of them's a web designer. You know, we're just random people, but we're all geeks just talking and having fun. This is, again, our opportunity to come outside and see the sun, but we keep it at night because we don't want to blind you right away. You know, come check it out. It's fun. I'll put up more information on the FP at the same time I'm posting this panel cast. So
you hear our voices, come see our faces.
Yes, as horrible and ugly as we are, don't worry, we're not really all that scary.
Okay, well, I think we're going to go ahead and I don't think we have any more announcements for anything going on with Forbidden Panel. I think those are the big three.
Right.
All right, so I just want to thank everybody for listening to the panel cast once again. This is episode 48, and I want to ask you all to please visit our sponsors and friends, FourColorFantasies.com, JaneRComey.com, HightowerComics.com, BrandyOssett.com, ReedGunther.com, and don't forget, of course, RoseBowlComicsShow.com, NecroSapien.net, and I think that's pretty much going to wrap it all up. Oh, I also want to ask you too, just a reminder, there's going to be new Geek Girls coming soon, and if you have any ladies out there that you know that would not mind sitting down for about 15 minutes to do a Geek Girls episode, please send me an email, brian@forbiddenpanel.com. And if there's nothing else, I think I'll go ahead and thank you all for listening and wish you all a good day.
Have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.